Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, June 23rd, 2012. This is episode 885. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and use the offer code TECHGUY. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. Our special offer is at Stamps.com. Click the radio microphone and use the offer code TECHGUY. Well, hey, how are you today? Good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk about technology, computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, anything with a chip in it. Notice I don't say computers. This ain't your father's computer show. No. This is a technology show. That means anything with a chip in it. Used to be a computer show, so I understand the confusion. My phone number, 8888, ask Leo, and I'll answer any questions. I'll entertain any suggestions, fight off any criticisms. I'll do it all right here for the next couple of 3 hours. 8888, ask Leo. That's 888-827-5536. Toll free anywhere. In the U.S., outside the U.S., we have a lot of internet listeners, I know. You can Skype out to that number. It's toll-free, so it won't cost you anything. Everybody in France is watching football. We have a chatter in our chat room. Vive la France! Vive la France! Or Forza Italia, or whatever it is. Yeah, there's a chat room. It's kind of a fun way to be in the... it's like the kids in the back of the class, you know, kind of the wiseacres, you know. But don't worry, you can't reach me. Well, I'm not worried anyway. We're the spitballs, but you could throw them. You just can't hit me. At least we haven't figured out a way to do that yet, but that's... maybe we will someday. But it's fun to get in there. If you can't, you go to the website, techguylabs.com, which I think is like literally on its last week or two. I keep saying that, I know. But really, this time... It's last week or two. Hey, did you see the Google Doodle this morning for Alan Turing? Very interesting. It is the 100th anniversary of Alan Turing's birth, June 23rd, 1912. He died, although for years we thought it was suicide. And I just read an article that said maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was accidental, but he died in 1954. Long believed to be at his own hand. He is widely considered the father of computer science, the father of artificial intelligence, one of the most brilliant people in the world, a code breaker who figured out how to use or how to break code created by the German Enigma machine during World War II and save many lives, possibly winning the war. At Bletchley Park, a remarkable feat of code breaking. He was in charge of Hut 8, they called it, the German Naval Cryptanalysis Section. And breaking Enigma was amazing. Enigma was a mechanical encryption device. You know, they didn't really have what we have today. You could do much better encryption on an iPhone. But in those days, that was the best they could do, and it was widely considered to be uncrackable. Really amazing that he was able to break it. Sadly, very sadly, a few years later, this great war hero called in a burglary at his house. The police discovered that he had a male friend living with him. He was prosecuted for homosexuality, was chemically castrated as an alternative to prison, and it is believed he died of cyanide poisoning, it's believed, at his own hand. Although his mother's and family believed it was accidental. Great tragedy. But if, and in fact, it wasn't so long ago, it was just a couple of years ago, that the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown apologized on behalf of the British government for that great tragedy. But it is good, it is fitting that we would remember him today. And really, a wonderful tribute to Alan Turing on the front page of Google. If you're in the mood for a little problem solving, this is a good one. This is a little bit of a mechanical program, a programming machine. And if it's just an interesting conundrum. I solved the first round, just kind of playing around with it. But then it gets harder and harder and harder. When you solve it, of course, you're pulled, as with all Google Doodles, to a page about Alan Turing. But if you go to google.com today and you say, what is that? Well, that is kind of an enigma, shall we say, in honor of Alan Turing. Wow, was this a big week for Microsoft? There is a lot to talk about with that. Two big announcements from Microsoft. One, the Surface tablet. What? Remember Microsoft 5 years ago now? Right before Apple announced the iPad, in what was pretty obviously an attempt to say, hey, we got one of those too, Microsoft showed a multi-touch Surface tablet that was the size of a table. Imagine an iPad as big as your kitchen table. And they have showed up ever since in hotels and casinos. I've played with one on a cruise ship a few years ago. They're pretty cool. It was an interesting idea. And it really was, I think, somebody in Microsoft research, when they heard about the iPad, said, well, wait. We've been working on this for years. We got something like, look. And now, here we are, 5 years later, Microsoft is reusing the trademark, Surface, for an actual tablet. It really is a good name for a touch device, isn't it? I like it. Surface. Unfortunately, Microsoft didn't tell us when it would be available, how much it would cost, what the specifications were. They didn't even discuss screen resolution. We saw it, so we kind of know what size it is. It's a 16.9. They said it's 10.5 inches. So it's iPad-sized, but it's wide, so it's, you know, it's a different shape. It comes with a smart cover, almost identical to Apple's smart cover, magnetically attached, with one exception. It has keys on it, so it's actually a smart keyboard. I thought that was kind of clever. And then, to further confuse matters, they announced two versions. One, like the iPad, running on a portable processor, the ARM processor, and really just using this Windows 8, they call it Windows RT, tablet version. And then another that really is a laptop. It's Windows 8 Pro, they call it. Running on Intel chips, so it'll have a fan and vents and so forth, and probably be a lot heavier. I don't know what the battery life's going to be like, but it's kind of a laptop. And they have two keyboards, one with, you know, the keys don't move. It's just like a Chiclet. You remember those? Maybe you don't. You'd have to be an old person to remember Chiclet keyboards. But in the early days of computing, it was a very inexpensive way to make a keyboard. I remember my Atari 400 had that kind of keyboard. And then a second one with some movement. Not much, millimeter and a half movement on the keyboard. Very interesting. And I hate to say anything negative about it. I have to praise Microsoft for being brave and bold and doing something very, very different. But it is a huge change. Microsoft has never been a PC maker, right? They've made some hardware. They make mice and keyboards, and of course they make the Xbox a gaming machine, but they have always been a software company, primarily a company that sold an operating system to PC manufacturers. So imagine our shock, our collective surprise in the tech industry, in the tech journalistic industry, when Microsoft said, now we're gonna change that. we're gonna start making our own PCs. They'd never done it before. This is a huge shift for a company like Microsoft, a software company becoming essentially a hardware company. And I think it's pretty clear it's in response to two things. One, of course, Apple and Apple's huge success with the iPad. Apple says we're in the post-PC era, and this is, in a way, Microsoft saying, yeah, you know, you might be right. Maybe we ought to make some hardware. It's also a response to the fact that PC manufacturers haven't come up with anything very compelling for Windows 8 or Windows RT, the tablet version of Windows 8. Because they just, I don't know, they're waiting. I don't know. So we expect to see these probably September, maybe August. Probably not next month. Probably August for September shipping. What do you think? I don't know what to think. We weren't able to, nobody was able to touch it. So it's all kind of a great big mystery. Hey, let's talk about it. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You want to solve the Turing mystery? Let me get my time and calls all set up, and I can do one or two of these. It's kind of fun.
It's summertime, and if you
run guys,
a small...
have you guys worked on it yet? Let me set my time and date. Okay. It's actually 11:15:34, but really it's going to be 11:16. And oops. 11:16, and let's make it 30 seconds. Yeah, 11:16:30 in 3, 2, 1. All right. And let's run my little hot clock so I don't miss my out cues anymore. Hot clock running. All right, now we can go back to the browser. So see, this is a puzzle. So to start the puzzle, press the green play. Always click on things with the Google Doodles. All right, now we're going to see what's going on here. All right, we're going to try to make the big numbers match these little numbers, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1. How do you make this into that? Well, we've got to change the second one into a 1 and the last one into a 1, right? So if we press start, you'll see what happens immediately. It goes through this sequence. So it's going to go left, change that number to a 0, go right, 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 change that number to a 0. What we'd like it to do is go left, change that number to a 1, then go right, 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 and change that number to a 1. Let's see what happens when we press start. 1, right, 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 1. Hey, that's correct. That was the easy one. Now it gets harder. So they're going to give another one, another puzzle. Now we have to turn that 0 blank 011 into 00011. So the orange buttons or yellow buttons are the only ones we get to change here. I'll zoom in a little bit so you can see a little bit better. We only get to change these. Everything else is fixed. So when I press go, it's going to go left. And then this is a conditional. This says if 0 go down, and then it would just go off the edge, because if blank ones, it just goes off the edge. So we can change that to if 0, if 1, or if empty. If empty, go down, and it'll change that to 0. So it says go left, if empty, go down, change it to a 0, and then go off the edge. I think that's what we want. Let's see. Go left, change it, and go off the edge. Yeah, we got it. All right, you ready for the next one? Isn't this fun? You like this? Could you solve this? I bet you could. I bet you're smart enough to solve it. You're pretty good. All right, let's see if you can solve this one. We've got to change 01011 to 00011. So the only thing we have to do is change the second position to a 0. Oh boy, this looks complicated, doesn't it? So when we press start, it's going to go here, and it says, if you're on a 0, go down here. But it's not, is it? It's on a 1. If you're on a 1, okay, now it is on a 1, right? Because wait a minute. Yeah, does it go to the next position? Wait a minute. No, it keeps going, doesn't it? So 1, 1, 1. Now go left. Now go back here. If a 1, see, that means return. This is the only button we can change here, this yellow button. So right now it says go back here. If it's a 1, go down here and go off the edge. Well, it's not a 1. I don't know what's going to happen. Should we just press play and see what happens? What do you think is going to happen? You got any idea? Let's press play and see what happens. Okay, nothing, nothing, nothing. Go left. Up, go back. Is it 1? Yes. Go off the edge. Nothing. It didn't change anything. That's not much use. We need it to change that left one to a 0, don't we? Well, these are the only choices we have. Well, we're going back, so... You see, it's how many it goes back. It's a go sub, see? Go to. So which one should we go to? That one? Second one? Third one. Mathematics.
Sensation. Code breaker. Troublemaker. The revolution reminds.
Smart man. Alan Turing, the code breaker. We've been solving during the break. We've been having fun solving the Google Doodle. Isn't that fun? It gets harder and harder. And I'm stuck. I solved it once. You know, the first, if you solve it, and the first, I think it's five or six problems you solve, then it will pop up Alan Turing pages. All Google's doodles do eventually is they take you to the thing they're commemorating. Although on this one, it's such a hard Google Doodle, they have a link at the top if you want to just bypass it and celebrate Alan Turing's 100th birthday. You can skip this one. It's tough. But I was able to get all the way through the first time. The second time, not so fast. Google Doodles started way back in the early days of Google. And gosh, you know, 10 years ago, one of the engineers just thought, I can't remember what the first Google Doodle was. They have a page of Google Doodles. In fact, they go back. Google has a page with all the Google Doodles on it. So let's go see. I'm sure if I Google Doodles, you have to know that's what that's called. Yeah, it's google.com/doodles, all the doodles ever. By the way, there's different doodles in internationally as well as. So the first Google Doodle was in 1998 for Thanksgiving. And it was just took the silly Google logo, and they put a turkey after it. That was it. And that was, of course, only in the U.S. But I think in 98, when Google first started, it probably was a U.S.-only company. Then they did a Halloween one with some pumpkins. That was it. Oh, and there's a 4th of July flag. Actually, that was November 30th, 1999. Don't know what that was for. Stars and Stripes. Snowman. They got a lot more complicated. So google.com/doodles, it's actually a fun site because you could see all the Google Doodles, not just ones in the U.S. My most recent favorite, since I love this Turing one, was the one for Robert Moog's 78th birthday, which is actually a Moog synthesizer with a recorder and buttons and switches so you could change the sound and a little wah-wah knob. And, oh, man, that was a lot of fun. I think it's probably a full-time job writing Google Doodles these days. Used to be just a doodle. Now Google uses it to kind of show off. They go, hey, you know what we can do in Java and HTML5? Look, we can do anything. 8888 Ask Leo. That is my phone number. TechGuyLabs.com. That is my website. If you want to make a call, make a suggestion, if you want to give me a ring or visit our chat room. It's all there. TechGuyLabs.com. Our first call of the day is Frank in Chatsworth, California. Hi, Frank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning, Frank.
Unfortunately, mine hasn't been that good. But I have a netbook which has been working perfectly for the past 18 months. And I just upgraded the RAM from 1 gig to 2 gigs. I powered it up. Everything seemed great. I shut it back down. After a few hours, when I tried to power it up, basically nothing happens.
Oh,
the power light comes on, and it seems like the fan runs for about 2 seconds, then it stops, and that's about it.
You broke it.
Did I?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, it sounds like you broke it. First thing I would ask is, when you booted it up and it worked, did you briefly check how much memory you had?
Yes, I did.
And you saw both gigs?
Yes. Yes, everything was fine. Okay. I checked it. It showed the 2 gigs. I powered it back down, and after a few hours when I tried to power it up, that's what happened.
Yeah. So the reason netbooks only have 1 gig is because Intel decreed it so. They didn't want people to buy netbooks instead of buying real computers. They actually were, I don't think anymore, but they were at the time terrified. Netbooks were really laptops. They were just really cheap, like a couple $100, right? Really cheap laptops. And they were made pretty cheaply. And they included very cheap Intel parts, the Intel Atom processor, which Intel made specifically for this. They didn't want decent processors. They didn't want a lot of RAM. Remember, the early netbooks came with XP because they couldn't run Windows 7? Or actually couldn't run Windows Vista because it was in the Vista era. This was all an attempt to give to enter a new part of the market, a market where it was so price sensitive, people weren't buying computers. They said, well, we would get one for the kids, or we would get one for ourselves. We would get one, but we can't afford more than a few hundred bucks. So manufacturers got together with Intel and said, what can we do? Well, we'll make a really junky, cheap, slow computer, one that breaks easily, one that doesn't have enough memory, one that doesn't have enough processor, but we can make it really cheap. And we'll sell it to people. And notice, by the way, it worked really well for a little while. A lot of people bought netbooks. A lot of people bought netbooks. And then they realized the fact of the matter, you get what you pay for. And they were junky and cheap and slow and unusable and had terrible screens. I have the first netbook. It was from Asus. It's the EPC. It had a 7-inch screen. It was tiny. Sybil in our chat room says, on the plus side, netbooks made malware available to all. Yes, it's very democratizing that way. So I don't know what's wrong, Frank. I would say the first thing you should do is reopen the netbook, take the new RAM out, put the old RAM in, see if it works. If it does, well, then we know what's wrong. It's the new RAM is messed up or incompatible. It's a good sign that you were able to, and that's why I asked, could you see 2 gigs of RAM when you first powered it up? And you could, which means, A, that netbook's capable of it, and B, the RAM is compatible. What happened? Well, it could have failed. Could be it was too hot. Well, I doubt that's it. You could try just opening it up and reseating it, making sure it's in there. Maybe as it warmed up, it kind of, sometimes this happens, expansion, and it worked its way out. Obviously, I can't fix it from here, but there's some things you can look at. Coe in Glendora, California. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, is it Coe?
It is. Perfect. Thank
Hello,
you, Leo,
Coe.
For taking my call.
Thanks. What can I do for you?
Well, I have an iMac at home that I'm going to give to my son, who's a composer and could use the bigger screen.
Yeah.
And I've had a Dell. Yeah, he's very excited about this.
I bet he is.
But it was,
how old is he?
He's 26.
Uh-huh. I have a 17-year-old son. I'm doing the same thing. I'm handing my Mac Pro down to him because he's gotten pretty good at Logic and all those great programs. The kids love that these days. They can make great music.
Well, and it's what he does for a living, and he's been, you know, using his laptop, but, you know, I knew the project he had coming up that this would be good for him, and we weren't really using it too much. So, but I wanted to replace it. I have a Dell that's actually, I think, 2 or 3 years old. The monitor's great, but I'm thinking instead of just trying to upgrade the computer to just buy a new one as far as a desktop, and mostly we just use it for web browsing, email, although we did want to do some video transferring and putting it on, you know, one of the newer computers that has a larger hard drive.
Right.
I just wanted to know if you had any recommendations. We went to, you know, kind of Costco with and saw this new CT series, but
hold on a second. We'll come back. What's your price range?
Does it say 7 to?
All right, we'll talk in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stupid me. I had to ask a question. Yeah, this is the that's the original. This is the first. I saved this because it's historic. That is the that's the EPC. This was the first netbook, and it was I can't remember what it was. Pretty cheap, I think it was, but it was expensive. It was $300 or $400. It might even be more. And you could see this, like all I think netbooks, has a door that you could unscrew that you could put another RAM stick. And I think I probably did. Although I noticed it says warranty void if sealed is broken. So they say you could put another 2 gig in it, but we're not going to be responsible. I think for a long time, all the netbooks I bought, I would, you know, it's $30 or $20 to put another gig of RAM in. It was, so it wasn't the price that they were sensitive about. I think it was really all about keeping these limited. Look how small the screen is. I don't know if you can see it because it's, I'll get some glare on it because it fades away. But yeah, there it is. It's a 7-inch screen. It's very unusable. This was a terrible keyboard. Remember Patrick Norton's review? He said, my fingers don't fit. And this was about the worst mouse I could track that ever. So that was history, boy.
We will be back with more of the Tech Guy in just a moment, but let me tell you a little inside secret on how the Tech Guy show works. You know, nobody's listening, right? So a lot of times there's commercials on the radio show that I am not, you might have noticed, I seem to be talking without my mouth moving. That's because I record them the day before. Because we have to send them to all the radio stations. There's 184 stations now. And I admit I was using a commercial-grade online cloud storage system, which you all know and have heard of. And I was having all sorts of trouble. People were deleting the files. You know, I mean, you got to get them to 184 people. And you got to control access. You got to know if they've got it. It's all, you know, it's complicated. So I was very pleased when Citrix said, hey, we have just acquired a company called ShareFile. Would you like to try it? And I said, well, yeah. And I've been very, 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 very happy. Let me show you how it works. I'll log into my ShareFile account. First of all, it's customized. It's branded not only for your industry, but for your logo. See, we got the Twit logo on there. I have a number of folders. It has folder syncing software, of course, but I can also upload directly to the website. But here's the cool part. So let's say I need to here's some ads that I recorded for KFI. All right, we'll go into the recordings. Actually, this is a promo. All right, so I need to send this to the promo guy at KFI. Now I check that box and I press the send button. There's also an Outlook plugin that makes it just like email. Oh, let me show you this too. Email me when this is a checkbox. Email me whenever a file is uploaded to this folder, because you can have up. You can turn. You don't have to have uploads, but you can have uploads. Email me when the file is downloaded. You have full control. You have a address book. So here's people who have access to this folder, and what can they do? Whether they can download, whether I get alerts, whether they can upload, whether I get alerts. Who can delete files? Notice, by the way, I'm the only one who can delete files. That was really important because somebody on this list was deleting files. I won't say who. So I press the send button. Oops, I got to check them. And I press the send button. And now, normally, by the way, it's a very quick process. I'm just showing you step by step. There's a couple options. Send an email. So I can actually make an email. And again, if you have the Outlook, you can do that right within Outlook. Or, and I always do this, give me a link. And then I have some settings. Email me when the file's been downloaded. I can even say the recipients must enter name and email before downloading. So first of all, they have to have permission, right? But I can also track, if it's a large number, as it often is, I could track who got it. I could say when it expires. And in my case, these ads should expire after a week. I don't want them downloading them later. And how many times they can download it, I'm going to say unlimited, but you could say as little as one or as many as 10. And then I send it, and they give me a link. Now, this link is unique. I'll copy it to the clipboard, and I can put it in an email. But let me show you. This is what they're going to see. So I'm going to paste this link into my browser. This is what they're going to see. Very professional looking. It's got the logo. They can press the download button. There's the file. They know how big it's going to be. I get an email when they download it. It's really nicely done. This is very sweet. This is the way you want to share files. You don't get the bounce backs. You can share files of up to 10 gigabytes. Securely, it's HIPAA compliant. So you don't, you know, if you're in the healthcare industry, you know that's very important. But it's also compliant with other standards in other industries. It's designed for business. That's the point. ShareFile.com. Now, you can try it for 30 days absolutely free. You see the offer code on the screen, Tech Guy. So visit ShareFile.com. There's a button that says, I heard it on the radio. Click that. This is the radio. Pretend it's the radio. And use the offer code TECHGUY for a 30-day, no-cost, risk-free trial. ShareFile.com. I'll tell you, my life changed. It's so much easier now. If you have to share large files, don't be emailing them. Anybody can read them. You get bounce backs. Use ShareFile.com. All right, now back to work.
You thought you found a friend.
This is our old theme. We used to play this back when I was on KFI. Somebody made me an edit, actually, of this. But it's a little repetitive. Hey, Scott. This is like a remix, a mashup. Hide my video. Quit my screen sharing.
Let's see here.
You're doing everything fine. Alex responded with what I was afraid he was going to respond, which is the HV40, which is, we bought a bunch of them when they discontinued them.
Yes. It's a little too pricey for me.
Yeah, I would just keep using the 910. The 910, by the way, will do 16.9 with enough bandwidth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a 16.9 camera.
Oh, okay. Well, now all I have to do is figure out how to put it on a tripod.
Doesn't have a thread, huh?
Nah. It's got a clip that you're supposed to clip onto a computer screen.
Right.
I'll figure it out. I do have a standard def 16x9 camcorder that I used to use. But I think high def's probably better, huh?
That's an interesting question. Not necessarily. I mean, we're not using high def.
This, well, I may go back to the standard def then, because it's easily mounted on a tripod, and I can...
Precious.
My precious. Is that the new one?
Yeah. It's my precious. It's the best thing I've ever used in my life.
Really?
Oh, God. It's incredible. When do you see it?
Precious. Yeah, the carbonite ring. Not a library, a billboard.
Yeah, something about having a bigger screen with a Retina makes it more spectacular than merely the iPhone or iPad.
Right.
I think we're probably starting a show. I don't know.
Yeah, Leo, you're on.
Are we starting the show now? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And with us right now, our home theater guru, Co. I'll get back to you and help you buy a laptop in just a bit, but Scott Wilkinson is here. He is from Home Theater Magazine. He is an expert in all things audio and video and joins us every week to talk about home theater. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Congratulations on the new toy.
Yeah, I'll talk. I got my Retina display MacBook. I call it the MacBook Elite. It's the Rolls-Royce of laptops, and it costs
Indeed.
About as much. But I got it on Monday, and my biggest warning about this is don't get it because it'll spoil every other computer you use.
Mm.
And so now this is the only computer I want to use because the display, I mean, it's hard to describe how much better it is. More so, I feel, than the iPad or iPhone, which are also very high resolution, very crisp displays because
but
it's
this
big.
One's bigger. Yeah.
And I dread the day Apple starts selling a Retina 27-inch monitor because then I won't life will be over. I will just sit and stare.
Right. Well, it just goes to show you that the higher the resolution you get, the bigger, the more impact it has on big screens.
Well, and that's exactly why I'm kind of a fan of 4K.
Yes.
Now, this isn't 4K. 4K, it is in a way. It's 4K for computers because what 4K is HD resolution but doubled horizontally and vertically, right?
And there is actually a little bit of confusion on that particular point because there are actually two variations of what we often call 4K. One of them is, in fact, exactly as you say, double the horizontal resolution and double the vertical resolution. This is more accurately called Quad HD.
Quad
HD. 3840 by 2160, I believe.
So you just multiply the horizontal and vertical dots.
Exactly.
By two.
Multiply 1920 by two, multiply 1080 by two.
Right.
That's it.
And that's kind of what this is, by the way. They took the 1440 by 900 15-inch MacBook, and they doubled it each way to 2880 by 1800. But what's interesting, and this I didn't get this right away, and this is what would happen in a movie. You know, you're not going to go to 4K and then make everything really tiny. You could, no. But that's not the point. Everything is just, you know, Tom Cruise's head is going to be the same massive melon it's always been. It's going to be exactly the same dimensions as always, but there are more dots making it up, so it's more crisp. It's more realistic.
Correct.
And that's exactly what happens with this. They're still using everything is effectively 1440 by whatever that was, 1440 by 900.
1800.
Oh, 900. Yeah. But what they've done is they've made it everything's the same size, but when a program is capable of it, they use more pixels to make up each dot, so they can do subpixel rendering and text, which makes it really crisp. Images come to life. I'm actually no longer editing photos in anything but aperture on this computer because it's so the color's better, everything's better.
Have you calibrated the color on that machine?
They're using for the first time an IPS display, which is what they are using in the iPad and have for some time in the iPad, and it's a much better form of LCD.
It's a type of LCD called in-plane switching.
In-plane switching. Yeah. Does anybody use IPS on televisions yet?
Oh, yeah. A lot of companies do.
Because it gives you Vizio, truer color, better angle. You can get on the side.
You get a better angle. Yeah. Generally not as good blacks as the other type, which is called vertical alignment.
Right.
Samsung uses vertical alignment, and I believe Sony does as well. But LG, Toshiba, Vizio, they all use IPS. And so does Panasonic in their plasmas as well, in their LCDs as well.
You could probably compensate for the black levels, I would guess, in some way.
You can. It depends. Yeah. It depends on the backlighting. I'd be interested to know what the backlighting on this...
These are LED.
LED backlighting.
Yeah.
It probably looks fantastic.
Oh, hard to believe.
I wish I could afford one.
Well, yeah, that's why it's the Rolls Royce of laptops. But, you know, all laptops are $2,500 in the good old or the bad old days. They've gotten a lot cheaper now thanks to these netbooks pushing the price down. $2,200, and I bought the base model. It's not horrible.
No, that's true. Have you gone to the Timescapes website? There's a movie called Timescapes that's done in 4K.
The Timescapes folks sent me the 1620p version of it.
Ooh.
And I played it back on here, and yow.
Must have looked amazing.
Yow.
Yeah.
Don't buy this because it's going to just spoil your life.
It's going to spoil you for everything else.
Yeah, everything else just...
I hope to get the director, the creator of that Timescapes movie on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have him on the Twit Photo Show in a couple of weeks. It's just gorgeous. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's all timeless. You know, it reminds me of an art film that came out some time ago called, remember, Koyaanisqatsi?
Koyaanisqatsi. I remember it well.
Yeah, it was John Cage music. And then,
Philip Glass, actually.
I'm sorry, Philip Glass. That's right. And then beautiful kind of... Slow motion.
Exactly.
And that's what this is, but it's of nature, not cities so much, although there's a rave in it and stuff.
Yeah, right. And some astronomical shots as well.
That's where it really shines. It's very spectacular.
Yeah.
It looks really nice on this. Anyway, is that going to be a theatrical release? How are they going to do that?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. I hope you ask him if you get to talk to him before me. Because I will certainly ask him that same question. How do we see it
online? You can download it. You can buy a Blu-ray. They're selling a Blu-ray disc online if you Google Timescapes.
Okay.
And if you have, and I think the only people who could really watch this are people with 4K televisions or this Retina display on the...
And the Blu-ray certainly is.
No, you can watch the Blu-ray, but this special 4K version.
Yeah, exactly. And there are a few people with 4K displays. I was just talking with an installer the other day who's installed several Sony 4K projectors.
Right.
And they will, in fact, accept 4K files. They're the only ones that will in the consumer marketplace. But, for those people who have that projector, which is $25,000, then they could easily get a 4K file and play it on that projector. And I'm sure it would look stunning.
Right.
Absolutely
amazing.
Well,
I wish you could all come over to my house and watch this, because it's just it was shot, edited, color corrected at 4K at 4096 by 2304.
And that's the other form of 4K that I was going to mention earlier. We have the quad HD, which is what a lot of consumer displays will be, but then we have true 4K, which is 4096 by 2160 or whatever.
And even this Retina display can't do that.
Isn't quite that. Neither is the new iPad. It's more like a 3K display.
Right. But I can get to... So they sent me a 1620p version.
Oh, man. That just must look amazing.
Timescapes.org, if you'd like to know more about it.
And the Blu-ray should look great, because if they did everything in 4K and then down-resed it to 2K or 1080p, it's going to look fantastic.
I'm passing it around to our friends here in the studio because they'll just have to be your proxies.
Yes, exactly. This tire in the chat room is asking if The Hobbit is going to be 4K. I'm not sure.
No, they're shooting it in 4K on red cameras. I bet you... Right. More and more, you know, this is what James Cameron was pushing and has been pushing for some time now, is shooting 4K, that super high resolution, and double or faster frame rate.
Frame rate. That, to me, is even more important than 4K, which is important.
And I'm sure if they master it that way, it's one of those things that, you know, when you see it in the cinema now, you won't notice it, but they'll eventually make it, 10, 20 years from now, we'll go, wow, that Hobbit was really good.
Yeah.
All right. Hang on, Scott. We'll talk some more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
In between, I drink black coffee. Love the hand me down.
Jerry brought me some Weasel coffee on my bucket list. Thank you, Jerry. Premium Vietnamese coffee that has been through the digestive tract of a civet cat. Don't ask. Scott, it is the best coffee ever. Well, at least it's priced that way.
Oh, man.
Scott Wilkins is still here. Co, don't go away. I'm going to get to you in a second, but I want to let Scott finish up.
Sorry, Co.
So we got talking about 4K, and I didn't give you a chance to answer a question, as you are wont to do. First of all, before we do that, though, let's give a plug to the Home Theater Geeks show coming up on Monday.
Oh, let's.
Who do you have on?
I have Jeff Tully from THX, who's going to be talking about a new THX technology called Media Director.
This is the competitor to Atmos?
No.
No.
No, it's completely different. And I wanted to mention Atmos as well, though, because that's opening this weekend.
Yeah, you saw the Brave premiere.
I did.
With an Atmos sound system. That's the Dolby. Yep. Solution.
Yeah, that's the Dolby system. Let me just first say that THX Media Director allows content creators to put metadata in the audio and video file that says how it was created. And if you have a Media Director compatible device at the other end that renders that information, it can recreate the conditions under which it was created, more accurately reproducing the producer's intent. So that's what we're going to be talking about on Home Theater Geeks on Monday.
Cool.
Now, I do want to mention Brave, this new movie from Disney Pixar, which opened yesterday, and it is the first movie with a soundtrack mixed in Dolby Atmos, which I think I've mentioned on the show before, which is a sound system with speakers all around the audience and overhead. And there are 14 theaters in the country that currently have an Atmos system that are playing this movie, Brave. Pixar animation is great, and Brave is a really nice movie. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Yeah, can't wait to see it.
I wouldn't call it, you know, Pixar's absolute best work. I'd probably still reserve that for Toy Story, but it's pretty good. It's quite good, in fact. The 3D looks great, and this Atmos gives you a true three-dimensional sound field. With stuff overhead. Now, I will say that the sound people who did the soundtrack didn't use it as much as I would have liked. But it may be because it's not the kind of movie that it would be used all the time for.
I don't want sounds coming from up above. I mean, you'd have to have an excuse, right?
Well, sure, and they do. They've got a castle. It's medieval Scotland, and they're living in a castle. And stuff overhead, you know, you hear it overhead. And when arrows are flying, you hear those overhead. It's a more immersive sound field. And I think it's a very good first effort. Somebody wrote me a comment on my website. They had gone to see like one of the very first shows in one of the Atmos theaters and said, you know, it wasn't an eargasm for me. And I said, yeah, that's a good word. I like that word. And he also said it probably would be better for an action movie. And I suspect right.
Helicopters flying over, shells coming over your head.
Transformers, you know, that kind of movie. Yeah. I think Battleship, even though that was a horrible movie, I heard. I didn't go see it. But
how could it not be a horrible movie? It's about a game.
Oh, my God. Anyway, a movie like that, I think Atmos is going to be amazing. But this right now is the first one out of the gate And if you, you know, if you can see it in Atmos, there are 14 theaters, four in L.A., two in the Bay Area, one in the Pacific Northwest near Portland, actually. A couple on the East Coast and a few other places, Kansas City, Chicago. You know, if you can see it like that, I would suggest it because it's it could be the dawn of a new the next generation in movie sound. You know, it may fly, it may not. I don't know. Dolby's putting a lot of hype into it and a lot of money into it. I saw the movie at the Dolby Theater, which is where they do the Oscars and where Cirque du Soleil has a regular show. And I was told that that theater was not designed as a movie theater. And therefore, you know, they could only do so much to make the sound really good. Plus the fact that my seat was way under a mezzanine. So I was kind of in an enclosed space, not out in the middle of the theater as I wish I had been. I'm going to go see it again and make sure I'm sitting in the right spot, which is kind of in the middle of the theater where the overhead speakers can really attack me, as it were. So that's what I think is big news this weekend, and I do recommend the movie itself.
I want to see it. I'm going to go see it. I don't know if we have an Atmos theater here. You saw it at Grumman's Chinese, or the old Grumman's Chinese. I wonder, are there Atmos theaters in most towns now, or is it just
No, there's only 14. Okay. The closest one to you is San Francisco, the Van Ness 14.
I know that one, yeah. Okay.
So, you know, if you can make the trip into San Francisco... I say it's worth it. I liked it in that. Let's see. There's one in Fremont, too, but that's even farther from you.
Yeah, but let's not worry about me. There's a million people listening probably want to just check in Gadget. They have a link.
Oh, and the way to find out where it is playing in Atmos is go to my website, hometheater.com.
Oh, there you go.
And there's and I posted a list.
There, even better.
So
get it from Scott's list. I can't. I would like to hear it. Thank you, Scott. Scott Wilkinson is editor, hometheater.com. He's online editor and joins us every week to talk home theater. Sorry, Co, you've been waiting for a recommendation this whole time. Now, you were starting to say how much you were willing to spend on that laptop.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking for a desktop.
Okay. Boy, laptop. Nobody's asked me about desktops in ages.
Well, good. I'm glad. I was afraid I'd be just asking the same old question.
No, it's funny. We don't people mostly, you know, we've been migrating the more mobile solutions over the last few years, first to laptops and now to tablets. What do you do with it? You said video editing?
Yeah, that would be the most intense thing. Mostly it's just web and email. I have about 3,000 CDs that I just need to throw into an iTunes library, and we have about 25 old VHS videos that I'd like to utilize and finally get those transferred over.
Okay. And you want Windows or Mac? Do you care?
Well, everyone has Mac laptops except me, and I'm probably the one that you will be using this because they pretty much are just doing their work on their laptops. So probably Windows.
All right. Yeah, you could save a lot of money getting a Windows PC.
Good. That's what
yeah.
I'm hoping.
The good news is that you can pretty much go anywhere to get one. They're basically a commodity product. I happen to like Dell a lot. We get Dells in the office, you know, when I'm buying Windows PCs for the office, because everybody in the office wants to use Excel and QuickBooks and all the PC programs, especially in finance.
Right.
So we get Dells. I think they make excellent desktops. I would not go to a big box store, you know, a Costco or a Sam's Club, place like that, to get a PC these days. And I don't even know if they still... I do see the desktops.
Yeah, I saw Costco. They were selling this ZT series, and I was curious
That's
about
probably
that.
Their house brand. They have a house brand. You could go to Best Buy. Best Buy does sell desktop computers still. But, you know, Dell, you can get online. Gosh, you know...
Yeah, I have an account, actually, with Dell. That's what my...
I don't like HP that much, and I'm also nervous because remember late last year they said we're getting out of the PC business.
Right, right.
And then they changed their mind. You know, that seems to me like a bad sign.
And is there a certain amount that, because I've seen, you know, 16 meg RAM and, you know.
You're doing one of the few things that would like lots of memory, and that's doing video. And photo editing do tend to like a lot of memory. I think in most cases 8 gigs is enough, but RAM is cheap. 16 wouldn't hurt. When I come back, I'm going to take a break for news. I want to talk about hard drives. That's changed a lot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Apparently, in Ashwin's Ashwin Rajani's dream, he dreamt about me last night. He tweeted this. He was unpacking a bamboo basket full of pressed shirts, and I was doing an ad for laundry.com. Get steaming hot laundry delivered to your doorstep and sent your dirty clothes back. It's just that easy. Laundry.com, never a dirty moment. That's a good business. I like it. I think that was more than a dream. It's a vision. It's a vision. Hey, Scott, I see you're still there. Don't want to drive you off or anything.
No. I understand. I was just answering some questions in the chat room.
And, oh, good. You're more than welcome. Look, we got some time right now. Go ahead.
Save you time for sure.
You're on camera, so you
here
know.
I am.
Here
well,
he
okay.
is. He's back, David, ladies and gentlemen.
David Bix was saying that he found some of the Pioneer Andrew Jones designed speakers on Newegg for cheap, and they're already cheap. So if you can get them for cheaper than cheap, then by all means. Now, I was telling him that Pioneer is about to introduce the next generation.
That's why they're discontinued, probably.
Of Andrew Jones speakers. Yeah. So, but that's not to say. Now, Andrew himself says he was on my podcast a few weeks ago. And he said that, you know, the new ones are going to be even better, which I'm sure they will be. But the first generation was so good that I would not hesitate, if you want to save some money, you know, get this last year's model, I guess it would be. He's saying the sale price would come out to about $300 for a 5.1 system.
Let me look here and see.
Man.
Which ones are the Andrew Jones?
They're the... well, they're the.
This must be it because there's a floor standing speakers, $200 a pair, crikey. Yeah. Five per customer in stock. These are nice. It doesn't mention Andrew Jones anywhere, but I would presume.
Well,
that's,
what is the model number?
This is the PSPFS51LR.
Yep. That's the Andrew Jones.
So it's $200 for the. For the towers, and then the center channel, which I presume is the SPC21 center channel, is $100.
Correct.
So now you got $300 for a three-speaker system, and then let's get a sub, which is $159. Holy cow.
Yeah.
So now you're talking $450.
And then a pair of the bookshelves.
Yeah, and then you got to get the bookshelves for the rear, or the side, I guess.
Yeah,
it's another $100. So for $559, you got a 5.1 system. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
That is pretty good. Yeah, exactly right.
And you think they sound excellent?
I do. I've heard them, and they really are great. So that's all I can say. They. If you want.
Wait a minute. There's coupons apparently. Wait a minute now.
There you go. I thought we were going to get a little. Less than $500-some, which
so
is like the list price.
David says the coupons are on the item pages, so let's go back to that sub and scroll down here. Where's the coupon? I don't see it. All right, well, somewhere, look for coupons.
Yes, exactly.
So how much do the coupons reduce it by?
Quite a bit, apparently.
Oh. Where'd you find those? Oh, there it is. Promo code. Oh, $80 off. Holy cow. So
yeah.
Now the sub is $79.99.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Wait a minute. Let's see what these $70 off with promo code. So $129 for the towers. Oh, they're getting cheaper.
Right.
Wow.
He says $50 for the bookshelf pair and $50 for the center and $80 for the sub.
So it's $180 plus.
$130.
$330 is so $310.
Yeah.
For the whole thing.
Yeah.
God, I almost should just buy an extra one in case.
Buy an extra two and get two small ones,
right.
Two bookshelves to get 7.1. Somebody here in the chat room asked about...
Just say this for me, please. My Emotivas will still sound better.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, thank God.
No, I think they probably will.
Probably.
Well, I personally haven't heard the Emotivas, but they got a super great review by a really good reviewer on our website. So I would trust his judgment implicitly.
Yes, of course.
So absolutely. No. You're doing just fine. Did you get your surrounds hooked
up?
Yeah,
they arrived. I haven't hooked them up yet, but they arrived.
Oh, okay, very good.
So I have to figure out how to get... I was going to do a wireless solution. It didn't work, so I have to rearrange my carpet so I can put wires. And I finally got a... You know, I was just... I have a leaning tower of gear on my...
Yes.
I finally got a cupboard, you know, that I could put everything in.
Oh, good. Okay,
so
that was my next
suggestion. Soon as that arrives, I'm doing all new... I'm going to rewire, move everything around so I can have the surrounds wired. And then
excellent.
I'll be done.
Excellent.
And by the way, if you order in 15 minutes, you get a free screwdriver. So hurry.
Matta 81 is asking about a good low cost 5.1 surround sound receiver. I like Onkyo.
Happy with my Onkyo, but I don't have golden ears. Denon, of course, is excellent.
Denon is excellent, and even their lower end stuff is good. And Yamaha, I think, is coming along quite well. So those would be the brands that I would recommend. Polar Cow asks about a good subwoofer. Of course, that depends on how much money you want to spend. But Shu, HSU, is an excellent maker of subwoofers.
Okay.
And good value as well. So that's Polser Shu is the guy behind that, the Chinese guy. I'd love to get him on the podcast, but his accent is so thick, he's difficult to understand. And I wonder about how to solve that problem. Pioneer receivers, yes, David Bix. Pioneer receivers are also very good. I like them quite a bit. And you can get in at the low end of those, and they're quite good. So let's see. Beatmaster says Denon is killing in low prices right now. I agree. What's your shoe size, Titus? That's good.
They're always looking on tight for titles, these guys. So Denon, maybe I should have gotten a Denon instead of the Onkyo. I just like the feature set on the Onkyo. I wasn't really particularly paying attention to sound.
Well, I think you didn't go wrong. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I knew that they were okay. I didn't, you know.
Oh, yeah, they're great. They've always been among our top-rated budget receivers, the Onkyos.
Denon does have a $200 AV, 5.1 AV receiver, so they do go pretty low. Wow, mm-hmm. Even lower, 172. But mine's 7.1. Mine's probably comparable to their 7.1. It's roughly the same price.
Exactly.
But I wanted the MHL HDMI for when the Roku stick comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It has.
So you did your research. You did a great. You did.
Yeah,
a great job.
Exactly. That's my job. Need. That's what I do. I do research. No, I knew the pressure was on. If I bought something crappy, I'd hear about it from you and everybody else. I still want those B&W, but the 800s.
Oh, I got to tell you, Tom Norton has just. I just helped him unpack the B&W 802.
Those are the ones.
Those are the big. No, those are the big ones.
Yeah.
Those are a couple hundred pounds a piece.
Jeez.
And we had to really, really do some serious, careful lifting.
All right, anyway, got to run, Scott. Thank you. Take care. Bye. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders. We're talking home theater, too. We do a lot of that. Even though, really, speakers don't have a chip in them, but it all started with big screen TVs. And if you're going to have a big screen TV, you got to have good sound. One of our chatters, David Bix, passed along a great tip to Scott, and Scott passed it along to me. If you're looking for a very, very inexpensive 5.1 surround sound system, Pioneer, and I think Scott talked about this a few weeks ago, Pioneer makes really surprisingly good, inexpensive surround speakers. And they are offering, I guess because they're discontinuing them, they're offering some exceptional prices right now at Newegg.com on their surround speakers system. So if you go to Newegg and you search for instance, the, I think it's the SP series at Newegg, the SP FS51LR, that's the name of it. These are the tower speakers, the floor-standing speakers. Normally $200, which is already, for a pair, a good price. And they're offering a coupon code for $70 off, $130 for your left and right channel. And then your center channel, they're offering a coupon for $50 off. So that's $50. And then you can get the sub. And if you get that whole SP system... Now, it's not powered, so you're still going to have to get an AV receiver, which is probably, if you're setting up a home theater system, something you'd want to do anyway. But you're getting, for well under $500, a 5.1 surround system. Actually, more like $300. That's pretty good. And I'm told, I haven't heard these, that, but Scott says the Pioneers sound very good. He told me this after I spent maybe five times that on a 5.1 system. Thanks, Scott. Oh, we were talking about buying a desktop computer, something people don't do much these days. It seems like everybody wants a laptop now. But if you want pure horsepower and you're not moving around and you want to have a lot of storage, for instance, a desktop is still a good choice. Big screen, right? I would say where you spend your money on a desktop is on a big screen. That makes a lot of difference. 27 inches is fantastic. Dell and others make very good 27-inch monitors for surprisingly affordable. Apple's 27-inch is $1,000, but Dell's selling 27-inch monitors as low as $300. They have a higher quality that, you know, if you can afford it, I would go to. But still, it's, what, $600 or $700? And I think until you use a 27-inch screen, you may not realize how much more productive you are. The ability to have multiple windows open, to see the windows full screen, if you're a video editor, a photographer, even if you're just a writer, having a lot of space on a desktop is really nice. The other thing that I think people maybe aren't thinking of, you know, we all talk about the processor. Well, what kind of, is it an i5, 7, i, you know, 3 gigahertz? What kind of, and we do, and I think an Intel i5 processor is a good processor, very fast. i7 even faster, and if you're doing something heavy duty like gaming or video editing, you might benefit from an i7. But we don't talk about the hard drives that much. We might talk about capacity, but speed? No, that's important. Turns out that's very important. And one of the things Apple has done now in its entire laptop line, and I expect most manufacturers will do the same, is take the spinning hard drives out and put in solid-state drives. Now, they're more expensive for smaller capacities, but they're so much faster, and you'll be amazed at the difference it makes. Boot times go from a minute to seconds. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. And anytime you're reading it's from the hard drive, which is most of the time, frankly, that you're online, it's just so much faster. I'll show you on this, or I'll walk you through it on this Retina display. I'll go through a reboot from a standing start. So right now the Retina display is on the desktop. I don't have any applications open, but I'll just restart it. And there you go. I'm going to say, don't reopen Windows when logging back in. So we'll just do a clean restart. And there you go. 1001, 1002. It takes about 10 seconds to from a standing start to completely restart, reboot the machine. And that makes a huge difference. If you're doing anything that does a lot of hard drive access, there you go. It's fully booted now. So that's how quick it was. It was about 15 seconds. That's nice. So I would suggest, you know, the capacities are low, but think about what the solid state drive is not going to be your data drive. It's going to be your applications and your operating system. That's where you'll see the biggest boost. And maybe if you had a giant movie or something you wanted to load. So I would say 128 gigs is more than enough for Windows and all your apps. Look at your current hard drive and see how much Windows and your apps take up. But that's not your only drive. In a desktop, you have the luxury. You can have multiple drives. So get a 128 gig SSD as your C drive, as your boot drive. and then get a terabyte or maybe 2 terabyte drives as your data drives. It's nice because when you reinstall Windows, you're not touching the data drive, and it makes everything much, much faster. So I do like that. So big screen, these are things you don't normally think about. Big screen, you're looking at it all the time. Faster solid-state drive inside it. If you really want performance, an Intel i7, but an i5 for most people is sufficient. I happen to kind of like the quad-core i7s, especially at a desktop where heat is not an issue, battery life's not an issue. Those are pretty nice, and they really are fast. So there's my suggestion for how to spend your money.
Enjoy.
I think you'll like your new computer, Co. And you could probably go to a big box store. The thing to look for, I wish Microsoft made these signature PCs more widely available. I would look at one thing to maybe look at is these new Vizio all-in-ones. They're really quite beautiful. But if you can find a Microsoft signature PC, Microsoft made a specification that said to the PC manufacturers, all right, we want you to make PCs that don't have a lot of junk on them, a lot of bloatware. They're very clean. They're very simple. Unfortunately, the PC manufacturers really didn't want to make those. So there aren't very many. If you go to a Microsoft store, you go online to signature.microsoft.com, you can perhaps find some. These are tuned, I think, properly. This is what you want. The other thing you really want to look for is a computer that comes with a Windows boot disk so you can clean it from the beginning. Looks like I think the signatures are only at the Microsoft store, although the Microsoft store is online. So signature.microsoft.com if you're buying a Windows PC. I bet you Dell sells I should check. I wonder if Dell sells a signature PC. Vizio does. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Appropriately enough, from Vista, California, Richard's on the line. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there, Leo. My question is actually following right along with where you were just going there. In a couple of months, I'm planning on probably replacing my MacBook Pro with a MacBook Air. And so I'm going to want to get a NAS drive to hold all of my data on.
Right, because the Airs are a perfect example of very tiny computers that only have solid-state drives. And so the capacity of the hard drive is also similarly tiny.
Right. And so what I'm looking at is something that's a dual drive so that I can, do the RAID and have a double copy there. And, 2 terabytes on each drive. I've looked on Amazon, seen a couple things. Reviews are kind of all over the place. So I'm just looking at, what you think might be the best choice.
For a hard drive?
Yes. Well, for the NAS.
For a NAS drive. Yeah, so I like, Synology, Synology, is a very good company. And then I also use Netgear's ReadyNAS, which I've been very happy with. Either one of those, I think, could give you great performance. Let me talk about what a NAS is when we come back. We'll get back to more Tech Guy in just a second. I want to talk a little bit about Stamps.com. I shouldn't have to even tell you. Okay, quick quiz, what is Stamps.com? Let's you buy and print. I bet you could say this in your sleep. It can let you buy and print official U.S. postage on your computer, on your printer. And what does that mean, kids? What does that mean? It means, say it with me, you never have to go to the post office again. Post offices are closing. Postal rates are changing. You don't have to think about it. You get the great USB scale. Oh, they took it again. Wait a minute. I got it back. We have 2 scales, and it's just this is a hot commodity. So this is a USB scale, plugs into your computer, works with the Stamps.com software. You plop the letter or package on here. It knows exactly how much postage, prints it out. It could print right on an envelope, which is very profound. I should have some examples. I don't. We mailed them all. But you can print right on an envelope, which looks really professional. You can have a logo and, your business name and all sorts of stuff on there. It's kind of like a postage meter, but it's so much nicer looking because you're using your laser printer, your inkjet printer. So it looks good. You could print it on. They have forms, like Avery labels. You can print stamps, right? So if you feel like you want stamps, you can do that. You can print right up the packages. It also prints out all the forms. If you're doing international, it will give an international postage order, plus fills out the right forms automatically from the computer. Same thing if you're an eBay seller. This is great. I know Dick sells stuff. DiBartolo sells stuff. You got to fill out forms. It takes it from the website, all done for you automatically. I want you to try it. Stamps.com. We got a no-risk trial offer. If you go to stamps.com, let me show you. S-T-A-M-P-S. Stamps.com. If you go there, you'll see right up the top, $80 value, you know, special offer. Don't do that. I'm sorry. Did I wake you up? Don't do that. Click the radio microphone. Enter the offer code TECHGUY, and there you go. Now I'm talking, $110 bonus offer. You get the digital scale for free. You just pay $5 shipping and handling. You get $55 in postage coupons free. You get a $5 supply kit, a four-week trial, all that when you visit stamps.com. Okay, will you do that now? I'm telling you, you will be very grateful. You can thank me later. See the buy supplies. I bet you can see what this to get the sticky labels and all that stuff. Stamp, yeah, see this? Net stamp labels. You buy rolls if you have one of those roll printers. You could buy the scale, it's $100, but see, get it free when you do it this way. Shipping label rolls, all this stuff. Stamps.com. Try it right now. Please, I beg of you. I beg of you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel like we're a revival here. Woo! 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number of my one of my engineers, Alex, brought up from the basement. A NAS drive. Oh my goodness, that's heavy. This is what a NAS stands for, network attached storage. It's really a computer. I mean, it's a computer minus a keyboard, a monitor, or a mouse. But in place of that, it has usually at least two hard drives. In this case, this is a four hard drive NAS, and they even have network attached storage because the focus is on storage, right? Network attached storage that is more than four drives. And the idea is this is connected to the network. It's got an Ethernet port on it, and you access it over the network using your existing computer. So you use your computer's monitor, mouse, and keyboard to access it. It shows up on the network as a shared resource. And because it has four drives in it, it's massive, many terabytes. And with four drives, you can do something called RAID, a redundant array of inexpensive disks that gives you not only a lot of storage, but also some data protection. On a NAS like this, if one of the drives fails, which happens, especially if you have four drives, you have four times more likelihood one of them's failing. Without turning the NAS off, you pop the drive out and you put a new one in. It rebuilds and you're back. You never lost a bit, not a single bit. And so that's nice. That actually is a really nice feature of network-attached storage. So network-attached storage is essentially a giant hard drive on your network that you can store music, backup stuff to, store photos and videos on, that is a little bit more resilient and has usually software running on it, because it is a computer and usually running Linux, and has software running on it that allows you to do things like automatic backups. This NAS that I'm looking at, which is a Netgear Ready NAS, has software that will actually go out to each of the attached computers and back up the data automatically, so you don't even have to think about backup. Most of the time, they'll have media servers of various kinds, iTunes compatible or Windows compatible or both. You could also build your own, as somebody in the chat room is pointing out. There is FreeNAS and other kinds of software. They're Linux software that you could put on an old computer you got lying around and do pretty much the same thing. NAS drives are usually sold as enclosures only, so carefully look when you're buying one, because there'll be two ways you can buy them: one populated with drives and one without drives. And if you get one without drives, the cost will be the cost of the enclosure plus whatever drives you put in, and that can add up to quite a bit. These tend to be fairly expensive devices. great for big networks, home networks nowadays, because we often have multiple computers. The kids might have a music library. You have a music library. You might also want to back up data. You might be storing your media files. You want to store them in a central location where everything can see it. These can do that. In fact, modern NASs even have what's called DLNA, which is a form of media sharing that allows your television to actually see what's on the NAS and play back files from it. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. The two brands that I like a lot, although there are many brands, are, as I said, ReadyNAS, which was acquired by Netgear some years ago. This is the one I'm holding. This, I don't know, feels like it's 50 pounds, is a ReadyNAS. I like them. They're very geeky. Synology, S-Y-N-O-L-O-G-Y, makes some geeky ones and then some more consumer-friendly ones. Both of those are good companies. I like them a lot. S-Y-N-O-L-O-G-Y, Synology. It's something probably most houses don't need. But I can, you know, if you're storing a lot of data or you want some. Now, remember, this is not off-site backup. You've heard me talk about that before. You still need another backup solution. One thing I used to do when I had a lot of data, too much data to put on Carbonite, I actually have two of these ReadyNASs. They're exactly the same. And I would have one run on my network for a week, backing everything up, and then I'd swap them and bring one to the office, so that I always had one copy of everything off-site. Haven't done that in a while, but I probably should be. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Richard, there you go. That's kind of my long answer to your short question. Does that help? All right. I think Richard is either asleep or gone. Renee in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hi, Renee. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey.
So I have the blog site that explores peer support and mental health recovery.
We talked about it a while back. Yeah, how's that going?
Yeah, it's going really well. And you recommended a camera to me.
Yes.
Partly so I could put video clips on the site. And I got the camera, and I love it. It's the nicest camera I've ever owned.
Which one did I recommend?
You recommended the Nikon D3200.
Oh. Yeah, and I can't take credit for that. We had photographers in the chat room and said, oh, she should take a look at the 3200. Everybody's raving about it. So good. So you like it?
Yeah, I really like it.
And it was in your price range. You said around 600.
Yep, it was. I think it was 700, and then I spent a little on some extra things, so it came out to about 1,000.
But you don't regret that, huh?
No, I'm good. Very, very happy with it.
What's your website again? Is there any video from it on the website?
There's no video on the website just yet.
Oh, okay.
But the website is peerwork.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And I'm going to be putting video up, and I have a question for you related to that.
All right.
Actually, I have two questions for you, so I'll tell you what they both are, and then I'll be quiet.
All right.
So one is, can you recommend a good video editing software program for a PC?
You already have one that's not bad. Are you on Windows 7?
Yes.
You can. Microsoft, you have to download it at get.live.com.
Live.com.
Yeah, get.live.com. get.live.com. And that is the Windows Movie Maker.
Oh, okay.
It's part of Windows Live Essentials. And it's you know, it used to be really terrible, but they've gotten a lot better. The Windows 7 update really is so much better. So that's a good start. And you certainly, since you've already spent a bunch of money, and I want to spend a lot more of your money, that's a good start. If you find it not adequate to your needs, the next step up, and it's really excellent, is from Adobe. It's called Premiere Elements. Adobe Premiere Elements. It's under 100. Premiere Elements. Okay. It's under $100. It's not horribly expensive.
Okay. That's good to know. That's very helpful.
Okay, hang on for question two when we come back. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's only partly terrible. You know what? I don't use it, but I've been told by many, many people that it's gotten much better. I used it in the bad old days when it really was just the worst software ever. But apparently it's gotten better. Drobo is not the Drobo NAS. First of all, Drobo's not a NAS unless you get the NAS version, NAS software. And even then, it's barely adequate as a NAS. It's not my favorite choice for a NAS. Think of the Drobo as just a giant USB drive or a giant backup drive, not as a NAS. Plus, it doesn't use it uses a proprietary format. And was it Scott Kelby who was really upset? I think it was. If you Google Scott Kelby and Drobo, Scott, like many, many photographers, was a big Drobo fan when they first came out. But he wrote a post on his Photoshop Insider column called "I'm Done with Drobo." And unfortunately, what happened to him is he says, "I use three Drobos, but I'm going to have to move to a different platform because Drobo finally pushed me to the point of no return." What happened was his Drobo failed, and because it's proprietary software, it's not standard RAID, he has to get another Drobo enclosure. The drives are fine, just the enclosure failed. And if it had been RAID 5, then I think he probably could have put it in another standard enclosure. So, I don't know if Drobo's a scam. I think Drobo was very cool at the time for what it was, but I have always used standard RAID 5 and NASes. I don't think it's fair to say Drobo's a scam. They're fine. They're good. I've never had a Drobo fail. We use Drobos a lot, but apparently Scott's had several failures. Yeah, no, and I agree. It's more flexible. There's some advantages. Drobo has hot swapping. I think they're fine. I don't recommend them as a NAS. The NAS uses RAID. RAID 5. Oh, okay. Thank you, Dr. T. Let's put that link in the show notes. That's so you can get Movie Maker so you don't need to have a live account. RAID 5 needs a matching enclosure. Oh, that's disappointing. No, I have maybe 8 Drobos. We have a ton of Drobos, and I haven't had a failure yet. But I just wanted to point out what Scott's been a little upset. Yeah, if you have a NAS and Carbonite, yo, you bet. You know, the heat on this MacBook is not bad at all. Even playing Diablo. Let's play some Diablo, speaking of which. Just show you what Diablo looks like at 2880 by... I need my BattleNet authentication. One else but you. Baby, you light up my world like nobody else. The way that you lift your head gets me overwhelmed. But when you smile at the ground, it ain't hard to tell. You don't know. You don't know you're beautiful. You're beautiful, baby. Yeah. Renee in Vancouver is beautiful. She has that great peer counseling website. She's got a beautiful new camera, the Nikon D3200. She's going to edit video, put it on the site. What else can I do to help you, Renee?
Okay, so my second question is I met a lady who wrote, sang, and recorded a really nice song about schizophrenia. And she's given it to me on a CD, and she said I can put it on the site. It's part of an album that she did.
Great.
And I'm wondering, what's the best way to take it off of an album, a CD album, and get it onto the WordPress site?
So, first of all, the thing to be aware of is that you will be using bandwidth, and if a lot of people start downloading this song from you, you may exceed your bandwidth limitations on that WordPress site.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay,
in general, I would suggest instead of, you know, the best way to do this, now it depends on the woman who made the song and what kind of rights she wants. But what you might think about doing is putting it on. In fact, this would be a great way to use your video, your new video camera. Make a video with the song as a soundtrack and put it on YouTube or Vimeo. Then they pay the bandwidth. You can embed that on your site. Now, if you don't want to do the video, SoundCloud.com will give you free bandwidth, too. In other words, don't use your website to serve the song. Because if it gets popular, and I think it might, if it's a great song, you don't want to have your bandwidth, you know, use up all your bandwidth.
Okay.
So SoundCloud is on. And they will, you know, you look at the terms, they won't, after, you know, you start using a bunch of data, they're not going to be real happy about it.
They won't be happy with me.
Yeah. Well, they'll just, either they'll charge you or they'll cut it off. SoundCloud is free.
Yeah.
Allows you to put music in there, on there, in high quality. It has a great community around it. I'm a big fan. This is audio only.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, that's great to know. Thank you very much.
Anytime, Renee. Thank you for what you're doing.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see. Patrick in San Bernardino. Hey, Patrick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, am I really on?
You're really on. Congratulations. You're our winner.
For the second time, it's a huge honor.
My pleasure.
What you're doing for technological literacy is just monumental.
Well, you know, I'll do it as long as I can, but it's moving pretty fast, and I'm getting older and older, so pretty soon some young person's going to have to come along and take over for me.
I'll tell you what, not even the Google Doodle.
Isn't that fun? I just love this Google Doodle. So what can I do for you today? Thank you for the kind words, and what can I do for you?
Today, really, I'm looking to get email on track. You know, I work over here at the California State University of San Bernardino.
Oh, great school. That's wonderful.
It's a wonderful school. And I'm really trying to get some different people on board with their emails. However, they do it from multiple devices.
Right.
And one of the things that I see is that they're not always seeing their sent emails between devices, and they're not always seeing their forwards through their iPhones.
Huh. Are you using, what do you use as a server? Is it a POP server or an IMAP server?
You know, we can hook up both ways.
I would use IMAP. So the difference is Gmail, for instance, is IMAP. Most web-based email is similar to IMAP in that they keep the mail on their server, and you're just looking at it through a window, in effect. POP mail is a little different. And I know you know this because you're an IT guy, Patrick, but I'm just explaining to the rest of the world. POP mail is a little different. It's what your internet service provider offers in most cases. When you launch your email either on your phone or on your computer and go to your internet service provider's email, in many cases, you're downloading the mail to your hardware and then erasing it on their server. ISPs like that because it doesn't take up any space. But it's not great for things like you just described, where sent mail is perhaps not showing up in the sent mail folder, things like that. It wouldn't if you did it on multiple servers, and that's the issue. So when you use a POP mail server, any changes you make are reflected only on that computer. So if you send a message on a POP mail server, it will be in the sent box of that computer, but no others. And I would guess your students probably are using the phone in addition to a laptop or some other computer.
Well, just a variety.
Exactly. So in that case, I think IMAP's a better solution because what they're doing when they're using, and the phone will work fine with IMAP, what they're doing is they're looking at a server for, and when they send mail, it gets stored on the server and so forth. You may have to, I'll look on my iPhone here and see, you may have to say in the settings, store a copy of sent mail locally as well as on the server. But it will always be saved on the server.
Now, in addition to the sent mail, what I'm really having trouble with, and this is why I haven't really tried to go full-fledged with some people with their emails on the phone, is that we're really having trouble seeing forwarded emails.
I think that's pretty much the same idea. You mean receiving them or seeing them after they've been forwarded?
So we have on campus, we have a lot of forwarded messages.
Right.
And someone will forward a message to me, and however I see their signature, I see their automatic signature, but I don't.
You won't see the contents. That's a different problem entirely. That's a client problem. They may be doing it wrong.
Who's they?
whoever's doing the forwarding.
How could they do it wrong, and how could they do it right?
Well, I know, you know, in some mail clients, and certainly the Apple mail clients, if you select any text in a message and then do a reply or a forward, only the selected text will be sent. Or perhaps they're forwarding as an attachment, which is an option on Outlook. If you're forwarding as an attachment, then the attachment may not be seen. I'm just thinking that they're doing something strange on their end. And boy, that is why I don't envy people who do tech support, Patrick. because that's one of those where you have to say, no, when you forward... chat room, what do you think? Is there a simple fix for this forwarded mail and they're getting the signature but not the content? I think the contents are going as attachments. And I think that that's probably a setting in the email client. Do not forward as attachment, forward in line. That's the phrase you want. Forward in line when you forward. See if that helps. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. We also have a website which is about to change. You'll see the old website if you go to techguylabs.com. Next couple of weeks, we're going to be opening up our new site. I can't wait. It's very exciting, and it will give you a chance. And this is, I think, the main reason we wanted to do this site, to add to what you hear on the air. So if you had, for instance, a good solution for Patrick, you could go to techguylabs.com, not today, but next week, and say, oh, no, you know, here's the thing. We had the same problem, and we'll have comments attached to each and every question and answer. So I think that's going to be a great resource. I'm looking forward to that. Jim, Walnut Creek, California, listening on News Talk 910. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. Good afternoon.
Great to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
So we have a couple of digital picture frame desktop sizes, you know, 10-inch. Those are nice. Now we want one for the wall, say 27-inch. And I found some online, but they're clearly made for, like, travel agencies because
they're expensive.
Down more than, like, every 30 seconds. And I want it to change maybe once an hour. And they're also too bright. I want to cut them down to...
So that I'm going to have to do some research, Jim. We're going to take a break, and I'll see if I can find something for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 27-inch digital picture frame. Here's one on Amazon for $800. But you're right. I mean, I think anybody who wants something this big, yes, he's as big and bright. And he didn't like the brightness.
If you're running a small business, you can't.
This is 1080p. It's really a TV, isn't it?
The world's fastest.
Maybe if you just bought a TV. Most TVs have SD card slots in them, right?
I got Epson Workforce Pro for the office. I liked it so much I got one for my house. I can tell you, I love it. The thing's more than just fast. It's cheetah fast.
So here is, let me just show you.
So the Workforce Pro is budget.
This is Diablo running on the Retina at 2880. I don't know how it's going to play. Let's see.
But the ink
by 1800. This is at full resolution.
Zips out two sides.
Of course, you're not seeing it, are you?
You can also cut back on paper costs.
But mostly what I'm interested in is how it's playable.
Mother Nature too.
Yeah, it's a little
paper, less trees.
Not bad.
And I got to say, the documents look more professional when you print on both sides. So put your small business in overdrive with the Cheetah Fast Epson Workforce Pro. And right now, save 10% on the Workforce Pro at Epson.com with promo code LEO10. That's Epson.
Help me.
For years, I've talked about ESET's non-32 antivirus for Windows, and I'm really pleased to see that ESET has now developed it for the Macintosh.
It's crisp.
Powerful ESET underneath. It's ESET's cybersecurity for the Mac. Just fantastic. Available in Apple stores everywhere. Not to mention
it's not super smooth. I probably should change some of the graphics settings.
Before the signatures are even
texture quality high, shadow quality medium, plus physics ESET high, clutter high. Turn off anti-aliasing. We don't need that, do we?
Yourself against malicious software. That's why ESET cybersecurity for the Mac introduces a brand
let's
new
see if that,
educational
if that helps.
Component alongside its renowned protection. It's just built right in. And, of course, because it's ESET, it's protection you won't even notice.
Yeah, that's a little smoother.
Don't take my word for it. You try
because it's so high-res, you don't really need anti-aliasing.
Mac for a free test drive. And don't forget to like ESET USA on Facebook and add ESET USA to your Google Plus circles.
So this is, if I go out here,
special offers and most importantly, security.
Go to the options.
If you use Mac, you need
this is running.
Security for the Mac.
running at 2880 by 1800. that is easily the highest resolution offered. That's full native resolution. Looks good. I mean, the text is really crisp. And it seems pretty playable. I mean, it's as I move around, it doesn't feel, it's not super high frame rate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Schizophrenia patient. Is that the song? Must be. The schizophrenia song. That's very interesting. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Jim is on the line from Walnut Creek, and he wants a big digital picture frame. Now, I see, for instance, I see one from Big E Frame, which is a good name. They make large 24 and 27-inch 1080p digital picture frames.
And I ordered one.
And it was too bright, huh?
Well, one, it was too bright, because I don't want people walking in the room and the digital picture frame yelling at them.
Yeah, the duck, because it's so bright.
It's clearly made for, like, travel agencies.
Right.
So the most you could slow it was every 30 seconds.
Right.
And I want to change it maybe every hour. And their solution was, well, copy the photo 120 times.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, yeah. That's actually a good workaround. These seem expensive compared to, an inexpensive Samsung or Vizio television. Most TVs now have SD card slots and USB slots and have the capability of doing slideshows.
At about every 30-second rotation, I understand.
Well, I haven't tried them. That may be the case. You'd sure save a lot of money over this. I'm sure that's all this is a television set that they've decided to brand as a digital picture frame and overcharge for, I might add.
Yeah, and then they put a cherry frame around it, which I can do myself.
Right. I would guess that, another option for you that would give you a lot more control is to get a monitor, a 27-inch monitor, and hook up a computer. You could even do an inexpensive netbook to this, something inexpensive, and have a PowerPoint presentation. Then your timing is all up to you. You can even do some fancy transitions and all sorts of stuff.
Well, it could be great resolution.
Give you better resolution than a television set, yes.
Okay.
So TVs are actually lower resolution than computer monitors because a television, even at super high def, is only 1,080 lines top to bottom. Most 27-inch computer monitors are more than that, or higher resolution. I'm sitting in front of an Apple 27-inch iMac. It's 2560 by 1440. That's much higher resolution. So you certainly would have better looking images. The only issue is expense.
Well, we were paying $900 for
Oh, this would be cheaper. In fact, here's another way to do this would be to get an inexpensive television and hook it up to an Apple TV or a Roku box. Roku box is $69 instead of a computer. And Roku will let you do slideshows from Flickr, from SmugMug, from other online storage places. So it makes it very easy to update it. You just hang the thing on the wall, plug it in, forget it. And then if you update the photo albums online, automatically that will update the display. I think those are going to be better choices for you. Certainly less expensive. Get a cheap Samsung or Vizio TV. You can even get bigger. I mean, we have, I think that is that a 27? I think that's a 32-inch TV for $300. It's a Samsung. And then hook up, instead of, yes, it does have an SD card slot, but if that doesn't give you the speed you want, hook up a Roku or an Apple TV and put a slideshow on there. You can, with an Apple TV, make a slideshow that you store on the Apple TV. 8888 Ask Leo. Anybody else have a good solution for Jim and his digital picture, giant digital picture frame, give us a ring. Or visit the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Russ Huntington Beach is a math teacher. He has a tablet, and he's been using paint to illustrate geometry. He'd like to do better. Oh, this is fun. I like this. A little educational technology. First of all, Russ, thank you for being a teacher. One of the most important jobs in the world. And math teachers have an especially important job nowadays. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
So you're using, I like this, a tablet.
Right.
And a painting program. And you're, so is it hooked up to a big screen? How are the kids seeing it?
What I want to do is I'm actually using the encoding, the screen capture and encoding software with Microsoft Expression, and I'm creating online videos. So I'm going to post them to YouTube or something like that. And this concept, by the way, since you're interested, it's called flipping the classroom. In other words, it's taking what you normally would do in the classroom and putting it out and making the students responsible for it as their homework. And then when they come to class, they're supposed to be prepared, and they do their homework in class. Is the idea.
Oh, I wish you'd do that with my kid. He hates home. You know, he's a brilliant kid. He does very well in class, but his homework is killing him.
There's so many of them like that, Leo. It's sad sometimes. You know, so many capable kids, and you can't get them inspired. You know?
Henry's super smart, and it's a constant frustration.
Well, I guess the idea here is, you know, the kids are all technology connected. It's hard to keep them away from their devices in class.
He's watching YouTube all the time anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm working on trying it. I'm doing it on a budget. You know, I'm doing this by myself right now. And once you get noticed in the educational community, then, you know, you might get some help from your district and that kind of thing.
Right. Is Khan Academy an example of this, would you say?
Yeah. Yes. But the trouble with Khan Academy, from my perspective, I don't want to, you know, denigrate anything, but it's just it's somebody's voice that the kids don't recognize.
Yeah, who is this guy? Right.
Yeah, and it's rather disjointed sometimes, and right. You know, so I want to be, you know, much more integral program. I want to go, you know, the first video is the setup. Here's the definitions. Copy these into your notebook.
And it's their teacher, and then when they get in the classroom, it's the same person, and it's all tied together.
Right. I can even, the software that I've got, the encoding software I've got, will actually take my picture and make it a little window in the bottom corner as I do this work on my laptop.
Yeah, I use a program. It's for the Mac. It's not for Windows, called ScreenFlow. That's great because what happens is you're sitting in front of, you know, because all computers now have cameras. So you're doing a screencast. You're manipulating your screen, showing the problem or whatever. And it's capturing your video. And then you get to – actually, I think – you know what? Telestream, I think, makes this for Windows or Mac. Maybe not.
Telestream?
It's from Telestream, T-E-L-E-S-T-R-E-A-M. And the idea is exactly this, is that you basically have a video production studio in your computer where you're using the camera to capture your face, using a microphone to capture your voice, and then it's capturing the screen as well.
Right.
And then at the end, you have editing capability so that you can, you know, edit. You can go full screen with your face, for instance, when you're talking, or you can go full screen to the presentation when you just want them to look closely. You can zoom in on a part of it, zoom out.
Okay.
It's exactly what you want.
That's all good. But my problem is when, like, I mean, you've heard of Mathematica. I'll tell you,
hold on, Russ, because we've got to take a break.
Sure.
I would love to talk more about this. This is a great topic. But we've got your local news. Stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hour number 3 of the Tech Guy Show. On a beautiful summer day. Talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. The changing world of education. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., fear not, my friend. Fear not. You can call us via Skype out. And that's still a toll free call anywhere in the world. 2-888-827-5536. Now, on the line, Russ, he is a math teacher. in Huntington Beach, California, and we're helping him get kind of a, what do you call it, flip the classroom.
Right. That's, you know, and this is not my invention. This is a, you know, an educational, I call it a buzzword or idea that's kind of floating around, and a lot of teachers are doing it, but, you know, they'll do things like they'll take a camera, a digital camera, and they'll just record their pinstrokes and that kind of thing. But
well,
I'm trying to go
if you think about it, I mean, this is what kids do at home. They go and they sit down and they watch YouTube. So
yeah,
why not
yeah.
do the lecture at home so the kids can watch it at home? By the way, you only have to do it once.
That's right.
And then they come in and you and then if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. What is it that a teacher brings to the table? It is one-on-one interaction.
That's right.
It's not lecturing. So
that's
why
right.
don't we record the lectures, do them perfectly, make them great. The kids can watch them when they want to at their leisure. And then when you're together with the teacher, that's when the teacher can say, well, did you get it? Okay, what don't you get? Let's work on it. And I think that
that's
makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Yep, they come into class, you do something that makes them, you need to hold them accountable for everything.
Sure.
So you need to have something where they're accountable for doing the, watching the video the night before, and then you put them in their groups and you put them to work, and then you go around and you monitor and make sure progress is being made.
I love it. It fits the way it, well, and technology makes this possible now. And I think that this is, you know, this is the other thing that a lot of times we get set in the ways of doing things. This is how we've always done it. And we're not open to the idea, well, how could technology make it better? And this is a perfect example of how technology could make it better.
Right. It's a great idea, but it, like, you know, what I'm going through right now, it takes an investment up front, you know, and I'm trying to.
As always, who's on the front line? It's the teachers. They spend their money. They spend their time. You don't get much help. I'm glad to hear that if you got some attention, you might get some help from the school district.
Yeah.
But as always, innovation's got to happen at the ground level, unfortunately.
Right.
And it's always, and that's why when I started the call with you, Russ, I just honor you because, you know, we owe so much to teachers. It's so important. I wish it were more valued as a profession. It is the most important thing.
Yeah, it's a shame the culture is that. You hear all the bad things about, you know, here I'm in, you hear about LAUSD and those kind of things and all the bad schools. But the vast majority of teachers in around the country, around the world, are, you know, they're just the opposite of what you hear about.
Teachers, you get into it because you care. And you
care
about kids and you want to teach and you have a vocation and you don't choose teaching because you want to get rich, I can promise you. I know you know
right.
that. I want to support you in this. I think it's a great idea. I think that, you know, if you have a computer and you're already capable of doing the lessons. What you said, are you using Mathematica? Is that what you said?
Well, what I want to do is I want to be able to use Mathematica. I want to be able to use the Geometry Sketchpad, maybe Excel. And then I also want to be able to do my freehand problems and incorporate any of those tools that fit that lesson into my, you gave me the buzzword here, the screencast, into my screencast.
Yeah.
But my problem has been I can do Mathematica. I can do everything except the freehand problems is I can't find a piece of software that is comfortable. The best thing I found so far is Windows Paint is the best thing so far, but it's very clunky.
I get it. So you want an iPad-like experience on your desktop.
That's it.
You want freehand drawing on the desktop. The problem, of course, with the iPad is you can't record it. Apple's not.
Yeah.
Actually, you can now. Because Apple has given us an HDMI out. I think what you probably, though, want is a... Are you using a tablet or are you using a mouse?
I'm using a tablet. I have a graphics tablet. And I've tried several graphics tablets, and they all promise that the software that comes with them will do what I want. But so far, everything has got some issue, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the ideal would be, and there are now ways to record your iPad, is to use, there's such great drawing stuff on the iPad, it would be a very easy, and if you could somehow incorporate that into your video, I'm sure you could. I don't want you to spend money on an iPad, though, at this point. So, you got a desktop. What, maybe the chat room can help me here. I mean, you know, there's Corel Draw, there are lots of drawing programs out there. If you have a tablet and you're drawing, I mean, it's kind of like, isn't it pretty much the same as drawing on the...
Yeah, that's all I am. Maybe that's what I need to do is just try some of the upscale, you know, artistic type pieces of software. Because that's really what I'm being, is I'm just drawing freehand.
Yeah, Paint is well, for one thing, bitmapped. and
right.
And it's kind of clunky looking.
Yeah.
Somebody's that's mentioning Sketchbook Pro. Is that available on? I know that's on the iPad. Is it available on the desktop? This is Autodesk's. Yeah, it looks like it is not. It's Amazon. I mean, Android and iOS.
Okay.
Let me see if they
well,
have.
Well, I found
it.
A couple of. I found a couple of things.
They do. They have it on Windows Vista. So this is something probably to look at, and I'm sure they offer it. It's only $38 on Amazon. It's called Sketchbook Pro. And it is a it is, you know, I've used it on the iPad. It is a drawing program, a beautiful drawing program. Another one that I love and I've recommended for years is called ArtRage.
ArtRage.
And it's artrage.com.
Okay.
Let me make sure there's Windows. I'm pretty sure it's available on Windows and on Macintoshes. ArtRage is a drawing program. It's $30. Beautiful.
Okay.
So those
I think that's the way to go. You've helped me with that, and then just you gave me the buzzword to look at too. It's screencast.
That's exactly what you're doing. You know, my friend Don McAllister's great guy, British guy from Liverpool, has the most lovely. He sounds like the Beatles, and he does screencasts online, in which he teaches people how to do things on the Macintosh. And you should see, because he's using that ScreenFlow software. Go there just to see what he's doing. His name is Don McAllister. It's ScreencastsOnline.com.
Screencasts.
And he has some free ones so you can look at it. You know, Lynda.com does a lot of this, too. This is a very popular way to teach outside of schools. Now we got to get it into the schools because it's what a brilliant... You know, when you're doing adults, you don't have classroom time with them.
Right.
So this is natural. You don't have to flip the classroom with adults. It's we need to do it in K through 12.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of the administrators and stuff have heard about it and are interested in it and that kind of thing. So we just got to figure out a way to do it in the time that we have. You know, that's what the issue with teachers.
I completely agree. I understand. And with the money, with the very limited money. Another one, Microsoft OneNote, somebody's suggesting. Of course, that's fantastic. That's part of the Microsoft Office, and it's designed to take notes, both handwriting and typing. It's a nice little program, too.
I tried OneNote, but the issue with OneNote is the cursor. You cannot see the cursor.
Oh, that's annoying.
Oh, yeah. You're always starting to write in a place where you're not. I've tried that.
I think Sketchbook Pro actually is exactly what you want. And it's very affordable.
I'm going to try these, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Russ, for the time you're putting into this. I hadn't heard this phrase, flipping the classroom, but boy, that makes sense, doesn't it? Oh, Autodesk. Here you go, Russ. Autodesk.com/education. They're offering this for free to educators. How about that? How about that? Thank you, Autodesk. Autodesk.com/education. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I don't think I'll ever make it on time. By the time I grab my books, get myself a looking at the corner, just in time to see the bus fly by.
You know, I'm going to see 38 Special. Leo Laporte, it's time for the county fair here in beautiful Sonoma County. And you get all the big acts. We had Night Ranger a couple of nights ago. That was fun. Last night it was Lone Star. And tonight, 38 Special. Rock and roll. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. I know I said that fast, but you know what? You could go to techguylabs.com, and we've got it all there for you, including a link to the chat room, all the links I mention on the show, and even audio from 885 shows. Julia in Fresno, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo the Tech Man.
Yay! You've been holding on for an hour. Thank you. Very, very patient. Thank you, Julia.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Of course.
I'm a teacher, and you know, I never thought of doing the videos and then, like, sending...
It's a lot of work, but you only have to do it once, right? And then you've
what
got these...
What a great idea.
Isn't that great?
Hey, you are the wizard. What can
I say? It's not me. Thank Russ. But, you know, and I did a Google search on flipping the classroom, and there's a lot of information about it. It's obviously something that people are starting to talk about. I think it's a great idea.
Well, thanks, Leo. Listen, sure. The reason I'm calling is we bought a smart TV, okay, and we're watching you right now, iPod.
I'm waving at you. Hi. Hey. Hey. It's radio with pictures.
But anyway, it's a smart TV, Sony 42-inch. The thing is, the picture comes across as kind of cartoony or filmy.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, I hate it when that happens. So a lot. So you have an LCD television set. It may be an LED backlit. Sometimes they call it LED, but it's really an LCD television set. And the LED backlit. It's a nice TV, but I'm going to tell you how to fix this problem, by the way. I'll explain what's going on. The problem, the negative on LCDs compared to your old cathode ray tube set or even the plasma sets is the response time on LCDs is slow. That means the amount of time it takes for a dot on the screen to go from fully off to fully on to fully off again is on the order of 9 or 10 milliseconds. Now, that sounds very fast, 9 or 10 thousandths of a second. But it's slow enough that if there's a lot of action on the screen, the action can get blurred and look a little uncrisp. So people complain about it. It does not bother me. I think they've got the response times used to be more like 100 milliseconds, and then it really didn't look very good. But 9 milliseconds, 4, 5 milliseconds, that's what the current sets are. That's fine with me. But what the manufacturers did, and this is on your TV, is they started selling these. Now, normal television is 30 frames a second or 60 fields per second. Let's say 60 frames a second for simplicity's sake. That means every second they change the picture 60 times. They're selling these televisions now as 120 hertz or 240 hertz, and that's what you've got. You've got a high refresh rate television. The problem is, now the idea was by doing that we're gonna make motion look better. It's going to look crisper. But it also gives you a weird video look. Everything looks kind of plastic, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and it's because you're still only getting 60 frames a second from the television signal from the DVD or the satellite or the cable, and then the television set is adding an extra frame. It's doubling it. There's no extra information, just it's doubling it. And so what happens is it gives it, a very ugly effect. I always turn it off when I see it. So you're going to have to go on your settings, and you're going to look for something that says high refresh or 100, probably it says 120 hertz, might say 240 hertz, but it's in your settings. You could turn that off.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. And then, frankly, you'll get what you expect, which is a really gorgeous picture. Those are good TVs. Nothing wrong with it. It's just that it's got that high and the interpolated frames, the high frame rate in there. This is a good. What do you teach?
Just turn it off.
Yeah, it's in the settings. I don't know what it's called, unfortunately. But if you search around for something like high frame rate or smooth motion, they might have a trademark, you know, smooth motion or something. But you'll be able to find it in there. Maybe somebody in the chat room has a Sony. Is it a Bravia?
No.
No, I don't know. I don't know how Sony calls it. It'll be in the manual as well, but you're going to have to search for it. What do you teach, Julia? What do you teach?
Well, now I'm doing speech therapy. I used to teach sixth grade.
Oh boy, this would be a good, I think, real world math problem for sixth graders. This refresh rate thing—it's kind of interesting.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Leo,
yeah.
Mr. Calling.
No, you know what I do? I teach. I just do it on the radio, Julia. And I don't have to worry about kids. They don't talk back.
Or the parents.
No parents to talk to yell at me. Julia, great
Thanks
to talk
so
to you.
Much, Leo.
Thanks a lot.
Have a fabulous weekend.
You too. Turn that off. You won't see that. It's
You know, some people call it the soap opera effect. It looks like video. It doesn't look like a movie. Cartoony is another good way to describe it. It's too smooth. It's kind of unnatural. And I'm looking online to see. Sharp calls it frame rate conversion 120 hertz. So on the Sharp TV sets, that's what they call it. I don't know what Sony calls it. Sometimes it's called frame rate conversion. If I could find a description of the Sony manual, you'll be able to find it. Motion flow. Oh, that's disgusting. Apparently, Sony calls it motion flow. So look for motion flow. That's what it sounds. Actually, it is kind of what it sounds like. Look for motion flow. Turn that off. We don't want that. Dennis, you're Belinda. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. This is Dennis.
Yay, Dennis. How you doing?
Thank you very much. I didn't know this was Teacher Day. I'm also a high school teacher, but this has nothing to do with my classroom, at least so far.
Well, I love my teachers, so you keep calling. I love them.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm trying to set up an outdoor theater, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I got it nailed down with a guru friend of mine, also a teacher, except for the projector.
How big is your screen going to be?
He said it's 20 feet.
Yeah, baby! And how far away is it? What did they call that, the throw? How far away is it going to be from the projector?
It will probably be, I'm looking at my backyard right now, probably about maybe between 10 yards, maybe about 10 yards.
Ooh, 30 feet.
Yeah.
So you're going to, you need a, yeah, that's a long throw. You know, most of the time when people use projectors, they're using them indoors where there's maybe a 10 or 15 foot throw. You've got a giant screen, so you need a lot of brightness. Of course, it's outside at night, so that's okay.
I'm in a very rural area.
Ah, even better. Yeah, because even inside, and I have a projection set up inside, you really want it to be dark. And your eyes adjust, and then it doesn't feel dark. Let me do some research. We want a projector. I can tell you what I use, and I will when we come back, but we may need something special for you. It sounds like fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm with you, Colonel Klink. You could pay the basketball players a little less and the teachers a little more. Because I'm not made of money, Web2214. He says, why did you get the base unit? Well, I'll be honest with you. The base unit's plenty fast. I do not feel... I've always thought 8 gigs of RAM is plenty. This is a quad-core i7 running at 2.3 gigahertz, speed stepping up to over 3 gigahertz. Plenty. The only thing that maybe I would have liked more is a larger hard drive, but I just didn't want to spend the money. So I got this is the base unit. I know that 256 gigs is sufficient for me because that's my MacBook Air has that. And so I have a 13-inch Air, which has been my primary laptop. And I've been very happy with it. And, I've got plenty free. In fact, let me look on this one. I think I have well over 100 gigs free. And that's with a couple of very, 5 or 6 gig movies. Yeah, 130 gigs free on this. That's plenty. That's with all my apps. One of the things I do, and this is kind of an interesting new use. So the one thing I can't do is put all my images on there. I maybe have I have two, for instance, I put them on there. So I have two image sets that I'm working on, the Norway pictures and my pictures from Machu Picchu last year, which I never processed. And I'm going to do it in Aperture because it's gorgeous on here. But that's 100 gigs of pictures. I could fit it on there, but I don't want to waste all that space. So it has USB 3. This is a high-speed USB 3 Corsair Voyager. So this is 220 megabytes per second read. So this is like a hard drive. It's 64 gigs. All my pictures are on there. Yeah, it's Class 10. It's a Voyager GT. And it's just, I just stick it in here, and that's all my pictures. So it's fine. So what's wrong with that? I did not feel the need to spend any more. I couldn't afford it either, but I just didn't feel the need to spend any more than the $2,100 bucks. Dick DiBartolo, Mads, maddest writer, and our gadget guy is coming up at 47 past the hour. Right now, though, I got Scott Wilkinson on the line, our home theater guru, who's probably going to say I'm full of it. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. I'm driving around doing some errands, and I just heard the end of that last call about frame interpolation.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to add my two cents that the name that Sony gives that function is motion flow.
Yeah. So is it in the settings, like turn motion flow off?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Virtually all LCD TVs that have 120 hertz or 240 hertz have this frame interpolation.
Right.
And almost all of them have a different name for it. You are exactly right. They have some trademark name for it.
So annoying. Because that then there's nothing I can say that goes across all machines. So you got to figure out what it is. All right, motion flow on the Sony. As long as I got you on, maybe you can help Dennis. So did you hear what Dennis is up to?
No, I was calling the radio station.
All right, our last caller says, I'm building an outdoor theater. He's got a 20-foot screen.
Wow.
And he wants a projector with a 30-foot throw.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very big.
So, I mean, I don't want to spend $70,000 on a Runco projector here. So, is there anything affordable he could get?
Boy, that's a good question.
Yeah.
A 30-foot throwing onto a 20-foot screen, that's very big. He needs a lot of light.
He says it's very dark.
Yeah, at night, I'm sure.
He lives in a rural area, so there's not a lot of spill of light. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I use the Epson Powerlight Home Cinema projector, and I really, really like it.
Oh, I'm sure it's great.
Yeah. I don't know if it's bright enough, however.
Screen, right? So that's...
It's 2,000 lumens, which isn't super, super bright.
I think the Sony projectors tend to be very bright.
Okay. So look at a Sony.
So I would say that the JVC projectors tend not to be all that bright. So, I mean, they're fine for regular home use, but I'm thinking about outdoors. I mean, I assume he's going to take this projector in and out of
yeah,
the outdoors.
Dennis, don't leave it outside. Or the screen, for that matter. You do want to, but I think he's probably for summertime. He wants to have, build his own drive-in theater.
Right, exactly.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because what I was going to say is, any projector, if you put it far enough back, will fill a 20-foot screen. That's not the issue. It's how bright that image will be.
Correct. That's exactly correct. And, a 20-foot image is going to be pretty dim in most cases.
Yeah.
I mean, you're almost getting up to, small cinemaplex size there.
And that's where the Runco will come in handy.
I recall the Sonys are very bright.
Okay.
I'm just.
Is it just a question of finding the most lumens for his buck?
Yes. That's going to be the issue.
Okay.
I would say so. Just find the most lumens for your buck. And the problem there, of course, is that like with so many other specs and measurements that manufacturers provide, it's going to be unrealistic, and they may not even have determined it in the same way one manufacturer
right.
to the next.
Right.
So you might be doing a little bit of comparing apples to oranges in that case, but still, it's a first round draft pick, if you will. get the most light you can possibly for the amount of money you can spend, and you'll probably be in relatively good shape.
Yeah, by the way, these Sony projectors have motion flow. they could go 240 frames a second. So
yes,
there.
They can.
Yeah, I'm just looking to see. They're not quoting the lumens on. I'm looking at one, the VPL HW30ES. It's a 1080p SXRD projector. It'd be pretty nice. Oh, it's only 1,300 lumens. It's even less bright than the Epson I was talking about, and that one's almost $3,000.
Yeah, that's the Sony 30 is pretty low end for Sony.
Right.
I believe the 90 is quite a bit more light output, but it's more like $7,000 or $8,000.
Well, I'm going to look. I'm going to a site called Projector Central, where they have a drop down. Yeah, there's a drop down that you can pick what you're looking for, and in this case, I'm looking for 7,000 plus lumens. And you can look for Sony, but you can look for any brand. This is actually a pretty nice little page that lets you. And Barco, Panasonic, Epson. There are Epson power lights, but look at the prices we're talking. It seems like they start at $7,000
for that much light. See, that's the problem with that. To get that much light out of a projector, you're going to spend some serious money.
InFocus has a 7,500 lumen that's only XGA. It's not even it's not even high res. We want something that's 1080p. The Epson Powerlight Pro for $20,000. That'll do it.
That'll do it.
The Runco Dimension for $200,000 has 20,000 lumens. That's probably probably a theater projector.
That's a theater projector sort of repackaged for ultra home use.
Would 7,000 lumens be enough, or should we? I mean,
oh no, yeah, 7,000 lumens should be plenty. Most home theater projectors do 1,500 to 2,000 lumens.
I'm seeing some Epson, like an Epson, a 5,000. That's not too bad. 5,000 Epson power light for $1,500. Panasonic makes some 5,000 and 6,000 projectors for $3,000 or less. So it's possible.
It is possible. I would say I would guess you're in certainly at least $3,000.
Yeah.
If not four or five for something that'll do a good job and light up a screen that big.
Thank you, Scott. I'm glad you were around to help buffer the pain.
Well, it's my pleasure, and when I'm in my car and I'm driving around on errands on the weekend, I'm always listening to you.
Thank you so much, Scott Wilkinson's our home theater guru. He joins us every week. Around in the first hour, halfway into the first hour, to talk home theater. And he does a great podcast. I'll give you a plug for that. Home Theater Geeks. It's every Monday at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time on twit.tv. And you can also listen and watch after the fact. But if you want to watch live, that's when it's on. Thank you, Scott. All right, take care. Let me go back to Dennis. What was your budget? I think we outspent it. He's passed out. Okay, well, there you go. Information received. Sony has a HD 5200 lumens, $4,799. Mitsubishi makes a couple. Mitsubishi is good for projectors, but a lot of these are not. Unfortunately, are not high def. I think we want high def. We want 1080p. Wow. Let's sort it by price. Let's see what the least... This is kind of a fun site, projectorcentral.com. Okay, look at that. Wow. But that's 768. Let's see what the first... I'm going through this to find the first HD projector with more than 5,000 lumens, and we're already over $4,000. So you're going to pay the price. If you're willing to do 720p... which I don't know how good that's going to look at 20 feet. There are some choices, even at $1,500. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick DiBartolo coming up. Hey, Dick.
Hey.
Let me put you in the big screen.
Oh, the big screen.
Whoa. 20-foot screen this guy wants in his backyard. He wants to do a move. I think you got to rent it. That's what you do is you rent it.
They can view them online, save them as PDFs. They can even pay on the spot.
Why not just have a 7 o'clock show and a 9 o'clock show? So you...
It's charged for tickets and you're set.
Yeah.
All the money's in popcorn. All sorts
of tasks. Oh, that's right.
Somebody told me, this is so funny. I wonder who did this. When you have a 404 on twit.tv. Make sure you tell them Leo told you. twit.tv/nonsense. You get this. We can't find the page you're looking for or Leo's salad. Who did that?
That's great.
So, okay, I got some choices for you, Dick.
Okay.
I could do turn the table turkey. I could do the Mac Pro with Retina display, but I've already reviewed it on Before You Buy. I could do, and I got this for the MacBook Pro with Retina display. The new, this is the new Corsair Voyager GT. This is super USB 3.0, super fast thumb drive. Or, and this might be more fun, I could do our new Vadio PTZ camera.
Oh,
this joystick
like that.
Controls the camera.
Oh,
watch! I'll switch to the. That's our number seven. See, it's zoomed in. I'll zoom out here. Whoa! And then I can. That's the ceiling. There. That's my office. I'm controlling this.
Yeah.
So there's Liz's. There's Liz bouncing. I'm not too good yet at steering it. Ew. I got to get better at this because I have to. I'll be doing this.
What, after all that drone work? What, are you kidding?
If I ever have to do a Predator, I'm set. So look at ours. Look how much zoom we've got, though.
Wow.
Yeah, that's great. There's Liz.
So what camera is that hooked to?
It's the camera is a special PTZ point pan tilt zoom. Vadio is the name of it.
Oh, okay. Wow. Nothing to do with Vado.
No, please. All right, watch. Let's watch some cars going by. Let's see. Wait a minute. Oh, there's a woman.
Whoop.
Oh, too bad. I can't go all that way. Well, let's go the other way around. Let me see if I can catch her. Oh, this is just for you, Lisa.
All right, Leo, Carbonite Library.
Apparently, Night Ranger still sounds exactly the same as this. They played our county fair a couple of nights ago. Let's all sing together. Are you ready, Dick?
Yes, sir.
Are we going to go motoring? Ready? Here we go. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Kyle Benham, our musical director, has been picking fabulous songs today. And if you'd like the playlist, we make that available on our website, techguylabs.com, after the show. Techguylabs.com. You can also follow Kyle on Google+. He has his little feed there as well. Hey, look who's here. It's Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and we call him the Gizwiz because he's a gadget hound. He joins us every week to talk about gadgets. What a great picture. How are we getting such a good picture of you today?
Well, you know, I bought that Time Warner Supersonic, whatever the heck it is.
He's on Skype. So the Skype, the sound is great. It sounds like you're right here. But Skype's always been good sound, but this picture is unusually good.
Yeah,
too.
You know, the internet now is three times faster than I had 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
So I think that's helping. And then I went back now to a Logitech high-def camera since I have...
Are you using the C910? Is that what you're using?
You know what? I'm using the C510. It's the one that you can actually... I like it because you can turn the camera. So...
That's good. We could use that for Turn the Camera Tuesdays.
To turn. Yes, exactly.
Hey, anyway, it's great to see you again, Dick. And it looks like he's wearing a lovely Hawaiian shirt. Is that a Tommy Bahama?
No, this is Larry Bahama. it looks the same, but it's $20 cheaper.
It's just next door.
Yeah, down the block. Well, Leo, I saw the brand new. I know you've been talking a lot of TVs today.
Yes.
But you probably have not seen this TV because it was released on Tuesday.
Wow.
It's the new Sharp 90-inch LED HD TV.
90 inches.
So you don't have to worry about can you see it from the side because the entire family can be in front of it. And Leo, it's 6 feet, 8 inches wide.
Wow.
4 feet tall. Now, it's not razor thin like the others, but it's pretty amazing. It's 5 inches.
By the way, those are my dimensions as well.
They are.
6 feet wide, 4 feet tall. That's exactly. What are the chances?
I mean, that's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
I fit right into that TV.
You do. The picture, it really is amazing. Now, we're not showing 3D content, but it is a 3D TV. Comes with two sets of 3D glasses. So now, Mr. Laporte,
yes.
Let's play Price is Right.
Oh, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. Obviously.
Is that going to be your answer?
No, wait a minute. Now, let me think. Because
okay, it's coming out in July.
I remember 1 year at CES. I think it was Sharp, showed a 108-inch, not much bigger than this.
Oh, that was Panasonic.
108-inch right. LCD. It was a big deal. In fact, I think that's the one that I got them to fly out in a Boeing 747 for Live with Regis and Kelly. And
I
it broke.
That is the one.
But that one, they said, oh, it's going to be 50. They literally said, hey, we don't know. We don't have a price. But really, truly, if you have to ask, this is not for you. This is for Shaquille O'Neal's house. They had it. It was so big they had to take the roof off. Now, 90 inches, I don't know. I guess you could get it in the door, but just barely. I'm going to say $14,999.
Okay, well then, it's on sale today for just $10,999.
Wow. That's cheap.
So, you know, 11 grand for it's pretty amazing.
The first plasmas I saw were 11 grand.
Yes. I saw the first plasma at Hemeke Schlemmer on 57th Street. If you got near it, Leo, you got a suntan. It was burning so
hot. I remember. Yeah.
And it might have been a 20-inch, and I think it was 25,000 or 30,000.
Right.
Yeah. So.
So this is what's the model number for this TV?
Oh, Leo, that's my favorite part of it. Of it all, let me just get it here.
Is this the biggest LCD you can buy, like,
it
normally?
It is the biggest LED that is in the marketplace. Yeah. And a wonderful, you'll never forget the name. It's the LC9LE745U.
At no point, by the way, in the title does it say 90 inches.
No. Well, the 90L.
You
have to be able to read a SKU code in order to make.
The LC90LE745U, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
The largest available.
Now, seriously, can you just buy it and they'll ship it? No.
Well, you know, my guess is they'll probably come to your home. You can pre-order now. It'll be coming. But you know what? When I clicked on retail, it said PC Richards would be carrying it. Which is a big box store here in the city.
That's not a bad price. And it says Sharp Aquos. Sharp made, I think, an even bigger TV than that Panasonic, I remember. 11 grand.
The picture is amazing. And also, when you walk by it, you feel like you're at an IMAX theater and you're 2 feet from the screen.
Right.
I mean, this guy is big. It's big.
You know, though. Still the best deal in a giant screen is projection. I have a bigger screen. I have a 120-inch screen. I have a 10-foot screen in my house. 120 inches.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't put anything on it, but I have the screen. It's that big.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, Leah, if you bought this, flush mount it into the wall.
Yeah.
Go outside your house, take a high definition picture of whatever is outside
like a window.
Yes, and then when you're not watching television, you just put that still store up there, and people walk by and go, whoa, nice picture window.
There's a hole in your wall. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I got to do that. Dick D. Bartolo.
If Sharp was smart, it would have been the Sharp picture window TV.
Now, that's a better model name than whatever, the 93-75-54 HUT. The world's largest LED backlit HD TV. Now 90 inches. Holy cow. Dick D. Bartolo is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website. If you scroll down, he has information about all the products he mentions on the show, of course, and on other shows like the fabulous ABC World News Now. But you can also play the What the Heck Is It game, a chance to win an autographed copy of the July-August Mad Magazine featuring What Me Webby, Spider E. Newman, And all you have to do is figure out what this is. Now, the good news is there's 12 autographed Mad magazines for people who get it right, 24 for people who get it wrong. So it's really the kind of contest I can play. Dumb pays. Yeah, dumb pays. Gizwiz.biz. Dick, stick around. We're going to do our weekly daily Gizwiz program in just a few minutes.
Perfect.
Lori in Burbank. I think you might be our last call of the day. Hi, Lori.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I've got some Super 8 regular 8 millimeter film from back in the day, like in the 60s. How do I get it to where?
Oh, yeah. You could do it yourself, but I wouldn't recommend it. You know, it's possible to make a box and project it on a screen and have in the back of the box you have a video camera and you videotape. In fact, the old days, that's how they would show movies on the old TV channels. They'd have their cameras pointed at them. Nowadays, I would go to a service. A good one that's a national service is called Scan Cafe. ScanCafe.com. Give it a look. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.